now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Kanan continues to train Ezra in the ways of the Force, but both become frustrated with each other in their new roles. Meanwhile, an underground transmission reveals that a Jedi Master, long thought dead, is alive and in Imperial custody. We're talking about Rise of the Old Masters this week. How you doing, Chris, in the one day I haven't talked to you since yesterday?
Pretty good. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. Did your candy come today?
No.
Okay, next week then.
I know, I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? It's that post-holiday season, you know, it's a little slow.
Yeah, but I did get a development, in another thing. So, you know that, cat that we found?
I was gonna ask about that, because I know what this development is.
Yeah, so, a few weeks ago, we were talking about how we've had this, like, little stray cat, that's been coming up, and she's big, and she's fluffy, and I've been calling her Ventress, and she's a big old sweetie and stuff like that, and we're making ground with, like, her getting along and stuff like that. Well, we did two episodes this weekend, so after we recorded yesterday, I came out of my room, and my stepmom was like, oh, by the way, Ventress is a boy, and I went, what? And my very doctor stepmom was like, well, we never saw any balls, but since I'm a doctor and I'm just used to doing stuff like that, she just reached her hand right under them, and she was like, yeah, I can feel balls. And so I was like, nah, don't say that. And because we've been calling this cat Ventress for like 2 months. And so she was like, come here. And I was like, do I really want to? I come over, and I put my hand right up under there, and there's balls.
Ventress is a boy. Maybe Vinny?
What?
Vinny?
Well, actually, I was thinking about renaming him Garazeb Aurelius and calling him Zeb.
Oh, okay.
Because he's a big cat. Like, he's really okay. Big and he's really fluffy. Just like Zeb, really big and really fluffy.
And purple.
Not purple, but I think Zeb might be a really good name for a big old fluffy cat. So, we're testing out names, but the thing is, like, we've been calling him Ventress for so long, it's just, habit to call him Ventress, so I don't know. We'll see if Zeb sticks, but all day today, every time I saw him, I was just like, Gareth Zeb Aurelius! Come eat some food! So, yeah. So we have a Zeb now, not a Ventress, so it happens. Well, normally I would ask how your week has been, but how was your day? Because I talked...
Not much happened today. Between yesterday and today. I'm still sick, so I did a lot of sleeping.
Yeah, we both have colds today, so I spent like what would normally take me about an hour and a half, 2 hours to do a podcast outline. I spent like 4 hours doing this podcast outline because I just kept stopping to like make myself sick.
It got warm here again, like last week, which was yesterday. I was talking about how abnormally warm it was, and now it's back down to like 20 degrees, and we had hail. Like little tiny hail balls, but some of them were coming down in little like clumps of little white pieces of hail, and they look like somebody was tearing up chunks of like a styrofoam cooler or something. You know how they have those little, you know, like flat areas, but you can see the round styrofoam balls around the side.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like. It was weird. There were all these, they were like merged together.
Yeah, we're kind of the same way too. Like tomorrow's our last nice day of warm weather before like winter comes. And there's a possible chance of like light sleet and snow on Saturday. Today?
I like how you say winter comes. We're like halfway into winter here.
Yeah. See, I took some DayQuil before we started, so I am not coffee. I just am sniffly. But, yeah, like, well, today was 70. Today was, like, 70 degrees. It was, like, 68 or 70. And by this weekend, we're going to be, like, in the 40s with a chance of snow in the morning.
Yeah, we're supposed to snow tomorrow, too.
So I'm sure that's a big reason why we have colds, because it keeps going, like, hot and cold and hot and cold and hot and cold.
Yeah.
Bear with us tonight. We're sickly. And I was the dumbass. And I was the dumbass that gave myself a lot to read. Shut up, Chris. Hey, I do it for the listeners' entertainment.
Right,
I can have
right.
water in 5 more minutes because I had a coldies before, and you can't drink anything for 20 minutes after you eat one of those coldies things. So I can have water in 5 more minutes, about the time that I finish reading the extra information.
What happens if you drink water with a coldies?
Well, it just gives the zinc more time to, like, get into your body, I guess.
Okay.
It just says very specifically on the package, like, don't eat or drink anything, like, 15, 20 minutes after you take one. Because it's like a throat lozenger, so it's just pure zinc. And, so you're not supposed to chew it. You're supposed to, like, let it ease into your body. So I think it just keeps it from, like, diluting or anything. I don't actually know. That is my best guess.
Zinc is some good stuff for colds, that's for sure.
Yeah, and coldies is nothing but zinc. So I'm hoping it works because I'd much rather go to work tomorrow feeling much better than I did today.
Yeah, me too.
Amen to that. So
used to that, yeah.
Bear with us tonight. We're sickly. So, well, you want to get into Rise of the Old Masters?
I am ready.
Did you like the episode?
Yeah, I almost think that I didn't see this one because I was like, I don't remember an episode this dark. We were talking about that yesterday / last week, and I was like, I remember them all being sort of light and easy, but this one's pretty dark. But I did see it because I remember the prison.
Yeah, I love this episode. This is actually another favorite of mine in season one. Might be actually, like, one of my, like, top 10 of the series, like, overall.
Wow.
Like, it's up there. So, you ready?
I am.
Rise of the Old Masters is the fourth episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on October 27, 2014. It is written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Stuart Lee. Some extra information for you. The Spire, also known as Sturgeon Prison, was a secret remote prison fortress located on the planet Sturgeon Prime. The prison was operated by the Separatists during the Clone Wars. Papa Palpatine and Count Dooku held Darth Maul in the prison before he escaped with the help of Death Watch in the Son of Dathomir comics. It opens at this prison in the Son of Dathomir comics, so you get to see it there. The environment and the look was developed for an episode of Clone Wars that was never completed, being the episodes that Son of Dathomir was based on. Senator Gal Travis is voiced by Brent Spiner, who is best known for his role as Data in Star Trek The Next Generation. His other credits include Outcast, Warehouse 13, and the Independence Day franchise. And I just found this out, and I thought this was a really cool thing. So when they go to listen to the Holo Newsnet, there's already a person talking before Senator Gal Travis breaks in. That is journalist Alton Castle, he's really cool because in Rebels, he also makes other appearances. So this is the thing I didn't know. As they were releasing Rebels, they had a side website called HoloNet News. And so what they did is, as the episodes were running, they were also running bits by Alton Castle talking about, like, oh, today Governor Price did this and Minister Tua did this. And so you can actually go and listen to it. And it's just straight up Imperial propaganda about Lothal. And it plays like an actual radio news show. And Alton Castle is voiced by Steve Bloom, who's the voice of Zeb. And it's just a cool thing I didn't know that they did, because I completely missed it in the show. So you can go and actually, like, listen to, like, Imperial newscasts that go along with the show. So it's really cool. The creatures are attracted and attack the Phantom are called Tibidis. TBDs. TB. The name comes from the fact, for a time, that the creatures were labeled TBD. In quotations, for to be determined. And the word TBD just happened to stick with the creature. Alright, here's all my reading. Why did I do this to myself? In an interview with IGN, Dave Filoni stated about the Luminara twist, absolutely, it became an interesting way to tell a story of what probably happened to some of the Jedi Knights, Jedi survivors. Order 66 didn't wipe them all out. Some of them were captured and probably executed later, which is what you see in the holographic recording of. It's actually Luminara's execution in that chamber. She was used for nefarious purposes, and it's kind of a nice way to tie back to the prequel era to use Luminara. A lot has been made of our ties to the original trilogy, but I'm not a Star Wars fan that would ever ignore the prequel trilogy. Let's face it, it's been my bread and butter for the last decade. I love the prequel era. So it's important to show, as much as how the Empire was built up, what it destroyed, and it destroyed a lot of these characters, and they got caught up in it. Luminara was a really good lure. We wanted the character that you would know, that kids who had watched Clone Wars would probably actually know too. That's why she got picked over other Jedi. We talked about the continuity of it, that she was dead, and it works out fine, actually. It's just a really active way of telling the story of the end of some of the other prequel-era Jedi, and that Kanan would believe some of them are alive is actually also really interesting. And that he knew Luminara, but not really, so it's a believable thing. I love that story, and it's just a matter of how effective we can make it. And then when he was actually talking about the about who Luminara was in the cell, Dave Filoni said, "Literally what you see is in that hologram is her sitting waiting to be executed. It's a recording of that event. So when they walk in and see her, they're actually standing where the Inquisitor was standing when it was recorded. So when she walks up and looks at them kind of distantly and not very friendly, she's looking at the Inquisitor, and that's what the recording is of. Then she steps over to the chamber, and obviously she gets killed there. It's a really wicked when you think about it. The material of her body is the essence that Kanan is somehow sensing through the Force, but he knows that something is off. But since he didn't really know Luminara, he doesn't really know. And that's one of the interesting things about death and the dark side and all these different ways you can use the Force. The sensing of people is one of the biggest dilemmas, I think, in all of Star Wars, because people want to use it like a metal detector. I am very, very certain that it's really just relates to how much you know somebody and intention of threat. You take these two things and combine them. So of course when Obi-Wan arrives on the Death Star, Anakin knows about it. Obi-Wan's intentions are fairly clear what he wants to do. He even, I think to some degree, knows when he's going to face Vader. And they knew each other so well, they were so close, it's like a battering ram." This part made me laugh, because this interview was way before they revealed that Ahsoka was back. "I had a really interesting conversation once with George Lucas about sensing the Force. It was in regards to, well, it would have been in regards to Ahsoka. It was an old talk he and I had at one point about Ahsoka and Darth Vader and what she would think of that whole situation. But we'll have to leave that for another time." And IGN said, "That's a question many of us have." And Filoni goes, "It's a good little tease there. Not that she's around. Who knows where she is? Ha 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 ha. Because Dave Filoni is a dick." Pablo Hidalgo said in Rebels Recon, just reiterating the fact that what Kanan was sensing was Luminara's signature in the Force, but it was amplified by her mummified body right there in the cell. And finally, in Rebels Recon, Filoni describes the Inquisitor's lightsabers as cheat mode sabers, meaning they are double-bladed and spinning, and allows them to do a lot of the things that Maul could do, but the Inquisitors don't have Maul's talent or skills. So it allows them to kind of cheat the kind of Sith thingies that Maul could do. I just like Dave Filoni just being like, "I don't know where Ahsoka is," knowing that she's already in the show.
Right.
Because he's such a jerk. But yeah, it's cool. So, I was kind of like, I saw a couple people were a little bit confused about like how the hologram could be that clear and that good. Maybe it was Rebels Recon. But it was based on the Cad Bane episode where Obi-Wan was undercover as Rako Hardeen. And when they were infiltrating Palpatine's little party, they stepped into holograms where they looked like guards, and they were a very super real hologram. That was the kind of hologram to Nalara.
See, I thought they were just like using some sort of dark side magic to tease some sort of like ghost image out of the whole thing. I didn't even think of it as a hologram.
Me neither.
I thought it was a Force thing going on.
I always thought it was a Force ghost too, until I was like, "Oh, it's just a hologram." I kind of wish it was a Force ghost.
I didn't even think it much as much of a Force ghost. I thought it was like something without any kind of like consciousness or real shape. It was just sort of like, since they had her body, they could just sort of tease out a little shadow of her, you know, to show up there. That's what I thought was going on.
Yeah. Do you want to know what forces ghosts into the things?
Force ghosts.
I'm sorry, I tried really hard on that one, Yoda.
Okay.
How are you doing today?
Not bad. Not bad.
Do you also have a cold like me and Chris?
Yoda has diarrhea.
Oh. Oh, I don't think you didn't have to share that on the show.
Share or not share?
There is no share. Well, since we did two this weekend and we didn't have time for people to submit questions, your question
is...
Yeah,
let's hurry it up a little bit.
Well, your question comes from me this week. So, Yoda, okay. What do you think of these newfangled Jungian Jedi like Kanan and Rey and Ezra and Luke who don't follow the Jedi Order's teaching ways?
Yoda's one of those, like, do your own thing, man, teachers. But used to be, like, working for the man and had to, like, be all respectable.
Had to work for Papa Palpatine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never trusted that guy. Mm-mm.
You didn't even really like his, like, fancy shoulder pads?
Oh, Yoda wants to teach, let your hair hang down. Except for Yaddle with fake ugly hair. Ugly Yaddle.
So you think that these newfangled Jedi are actually like doing really good with the new ways of the Force?
Yeah, man, yeah.
Yeah! Stick it to the man.
I'll hang out, let it.
The sacred text. Just burn them. Burn them and let your hair down. Let your titties out. Tits out, balls up.
Yoda made joke and burned down Jedi text. Ha ha. Yoda has to go.
Bye, Yoda. See you next week.
Laughed too hard.
Oh, Yoda sharted himself.
That's awful.
Well, I'm glad that he lives with you and not with me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Act 1?
Yeah, Act 1.
So, Act 1. We open with Ezra and Kanan working on their Jedi training. And Kanan is just trying to be a master, and Ezra is just trying to just learn anything about the Force. And they're outside the Ghost, which is like hovering and chill flying through the Lothal skies. Chopper and Zeb are watching with popcorn, and they're just having the best time. And Kanan is like, do or do not. There is no try. And Ezra is like, that's a garbage line. What does it mean? And Kanan's like, yeah, Yoda used to say it. I was hoping to make it sound cool. I don't actually know what it means. And Zeb gets bored, and he's just like, I am not entertained. And he messes up Ezra's concentration. And Kanan decides to try something else. He hands his lightsaber to Ezra to teach him some more practice. And then Ezra almost cuts off Kanan's head by accident. And they give him the targets to try and hit while his eyes are closed, which is Chopper just throwing milk cartons at him. Which ends with Chopper beating the crap out of Ezra with milk cartons as Kanan gets more and more annoyed at the instructions not working. And then Ezra falls off the side of the ship and begins to plummet to his death. But Kanan catches him with the Force and hauls him back up through the skies until until Zeb can catch him on the loading ramp. And then we also get to see our first real look at a Lothcat, and it's a Lothcat, and I love them. Lothcats forever. Safe inside the Ghost, Kanan blames Ezra for being unfocused and doubting. Ezra blames Kanan for being a bad teacher and not teaching him right. And Space Mom Hera comes over to try and smooth things over, but Sabine grabs everyone's attention. It's time for their Rebels news. As Senator Gull Travis has a secret radio show to combat the Imperial propaganda with real news. He says that Jedi Master Luminara Unduli is alive and is imprisoned where they used to keep Darth Maul. Kanan and Hera are suddenly super interested, especially Kanan, who's had a really bad Jedi morning, and the transmission suddenly cuts back to the Imperial TV. Kanan is in awe, saying that he met Luminara once, and she was awesome, fucking awesome, in all the ways that she could be, and 12 times the Jedi than he ever was. But when Kanan says that she would be a great master for Ezra, the little blueberry does not look like he's on board with this plan anymore, and he looks sad. He's a sad berry, not a blueberry. Poor Ezra. And Hera and Kanan can't pass up this opportunity to save a Jedi master. They call for everyone to get ready. And Ezra is sad, a little blueberry, because Kanan is done with him. What'd you think of Act 1?
I'd be mad, too. That's kind of jerky of Kanan.
You know, I have some notes about that later. I think it's actually a really well done in the course of, like, everything. But I think I have that note in, like, I think Act 3? We'll see when we actually read our notes, because I don't remember what I wrote today.
Like, what Kanan said seemed more like something that would be better to do in your little internal dialogue than actually saying right to Ezra.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I think he's also kind of excited because Kanan is obviously having doubts about, like, being a master anyway, and he's struggling, and a lot of it is because he was never a Jedi Master. He was always a Padawan. So, like, he's not even sure, like, how to even teach. So I think a lot of it is the excitement of, like, oh my god, somebody can actually do this that I can't. And maybe he can actually finish his training, too.
Hmm. Yeah. But that's not how it came out. That's why I would have kept it. That's why I would have been just like,
yeah, but what kind of TV? This is TV, though. It has to be all out in the open.
I know. But if I had a ship that could hover like that, I would be hanging out, like, just hanging out in the clouds like that all the time.
I know, and, like, watching sunsets?
Just sort of lounging out on top of my ship. Yeah. And especially, like, and there were some shots out through the, out from the inside of the ship to the outside at twilight that just looked beautiful in this. And my only other note in this one is Kanan says laser sword.
I know! I have that note too!
I didn't notice it the first time, but it's funny because that's sort of
The Last Jedi thing.
Yeah, it sort of predates The Last Jedi a little bit. I like it.
I have that line, that note that says, there's a little bit of Last Jedi in this opening act when Kanan says, having a laser sword doesn't make you a Jedi.
Yeah.
Which is what Luke said to Rey, like, lifting rocks and having laser sword doesn't make you a Jedi.
Yeah, and this is a few years before The Last Jedi. I like it.
Yeah.
But that's all I got, really, for part one.
My first note, in all caps, I have written, Loth Cats! Loth Cats! With several A's, just, I love Loth Cats! They're adorable, and I love them. Alright, let me just read my notes. The episode starts with Ezra doing handstands. Okay, I remember writing this. I would have liked to see, like, Ezra learning how to do handstands, and him being like, Kanan, why is doing handstands important? And Kanan just being like, I don't know, it's a Jedi thing. Like, why always handstands?
It's, so you can learn to do things while being physically distracted.
Yeah, but
it makes all the midichlorians rush to your head.
But I would have just loved to see, like, Kanan, like, Ezra just being like, I don't know how to do a handstand, and Kanan's like, okay, well, that's lesson number one. Why? I don't know.
It's like, if I was Thanos, I would be screwed because I can't snap my fingers. Yeah.
I could have
spent all that time gathering up my Infinity Gauntlet, and then I would have just not been able to do nothing with it.
I can't whistle, but I can West Side Story.
Uh-huh.
Are you picking up my snaps?
I am.
Okay, cool. Just making sure.
We're all picking up on your snaps. Hope.
Well, don't be so snappy. Anyway.
Wow.
Shut up. It's fine. My next note is, I really like
this episode. If you say so.
My next note is, I really like this opening bit a lot because it says a lot about Kanan and where he is at as a person. We know from watching and reading the Kanan comics and books like A New Dawn that Kanan was a Padawan when Order 66 happened. But I don't think it's actually been verbalized and stated in the show up to this point. So whether or not you knew that about Kanan, he's still presented as an unsure teacher. Or, and kind of like the cool guy class clown was suddenly in a position of actually having to teach someone how to learn. I like how they're showing, like, how absolutely unprepared Kanan is as a teacher. Like, he just doesn't, he never saw himself, like, going to be in this position probably ever. And now he has a Padawan, and he has absolutely no idea what to do about it. And I think it's, like, his frustrations and, like, trying really hard and things are not working for him, I think actually works very well for the show.
I agree.
I also like to think about, like, all the Jedi Masters that we love going through this with their Padawans, where the teachers are actually very unsure and the students are frustrated. Like Mace Windu trying to teach Depa Bialba and just Mace being like, I don't know what to do with her. Oh my god, what do we do? Because we've seen like a little bit of like Obi-Wan and Anakin and how that worked out, and like Anakin and Ahsoka. But I just like thinking of like Mace Windu just being like, this goddamn little girl is going to be the death of me.
Yeah, his first one was probably really tough.
Yeah, because like he's so like unbending, and I just would love to see him get like an Anakin or a Kanan who's just like, yeah, break the rules!
Yeah, Anakin would have broke him.
Mace would have probably just been like, hey, Anakin, what's that? Shoves off the side of a cliff. Oh, exactly. No.
Yeah, oh, lost my apprentice.
Anakin died. And thus Mace Windu saved all of Star Wars. But it actually feels like a little bit different here. The way that it's happening with like Kanan and Ezra because of their relationship being different. Because like when I like read things and I see things that are Anakin or Obi-Wan, or even with Depa Bialba with Kanan in the Kanan comics, it still has that teacher feel to it, like a teacher and mentor feel. But here it's different because like Kanan is more of a parent role than a teacher role, and he's been kind of like the cool kind of parent and stuff like that. So it actually, I really like how the feeling is a little bit different of like frustrated dad instead of frustrated teacher.
Right.
And it's very subtle, but I like that kind of differences between like Kanan and Obi-Wan handling Ezra and Anakin.
Well, it's like a lot of the best Jedi seem to all have connections, even though they're not supposed to, you know, personal connections.
Mm-hmm.
Or attachments, I should say.
Attachments. Oh.
Yoda has some personal attachments.
I was actually thinking.
Some of them need batteries.
I was actually thinking the C-3PO top card I got you with the
right.
with yeah, the golden rod attachment.
That was quite an attachment.
My next note is, I actually really love seeing Imperial propaganda changing what we saw happen with Zeb and Ezra in the last episode, because then it makes the rebels look bad. And not to get political on the show, because the only politics that we try to talk about on the show is Star Wars politics, it did have kind of a feeling of what we're seeing today in our own news sources and this time period. And it's kind of similar because, like, we as the viewers saw what happened to Zeb and Ezra. So, like, that's, like, one side. And then here's the Empire looking at it and changing it to be the same thing, but in a different side. And it's really well done just to show how, like, one subtle change of, like, how the Empire spins their propaganda to make it very believable that the rebels are actually bad. And I really liked that. And it kind of very much reminded me of, like, what's going on with, like, modern-day news media and stuff.
Yeah, or news media through my whole life, anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, I shouldn't even really say modern-day. Like, this is news media.
Yeah. That's where I was just gonna say that's where they got the setup for this.
Yeah, I mean, this is straight up like World War II politics and media in like Germany, so.
Oh, World War II is the greatest source of like, you know, if you wanted to like make copy propaganda from World War II on all sides had some of the greatest propaganda of all time. They really did it up in those days.
Something that's actually like a little secret like love of mine is I really love World War II posters. Just like the drawings great. And the designs and stuff like that.
The art on them are amazing.
Yeah, and I love the artwork. And if I had like more disposable income, I would actually love to try and get like... There's a couple that I really like. And I would really like to get those because I love the artwork on them. Not so much the artwork for, like, say, the Japanese.
Japanese and Nazi propaganda, but yeah.
Well, just American drawing Japanese during that time is horrific. But
I was just going to say, anybody depicted in their enemy's propaganda looked horrible.
Yeah, but something like, say, like, straight up, like War Bond posters and, like,
right,
Rosie the Riveter.
Yeah.
So I love that. And my last note for this act is, Kanan wanting Luminara to train Ezra is probably really heartbreaking to Ezra, because he's lost so many people he's loved, like his parents and stuff like that. So it makes sense that, like, this is something that really truly hurts him, because he probably is just getting settled in and getting to a place where it's like, okay, I have a place here, and now Kanan wants to shove me off on somebody else.
Oh, it's not even probably heartbreaking. You can see it on his face immediately. You can see that he's hurt as soon as Kanan says that.
Yeah.
They're really good. By after all those years at Clone Wars, they're really good with facial expressions now on Rebels. That's one thing that they don't have to... I mean, the animation does get better as it goes along, but, like, yeah, the facial expressions at this point, some of them are just in these shows.
I didn't make a note of it, but since we're talking about animation, in the next act we have Hera waiting in the Phantom on the side of the cliff, and she's leaning back, and the animation of her Leku, because they're hanging back behind her because she's on an incline, and every time she moves her head, like, her Leku has their own, like, movement to it, and since they're two separate entities, and they're, like, attached to her, I really enjoyed, like, watching her Leku move, like, when she was, like, looking back and forth at the TVs. She was like, what is that? Like, her Leku was just, like, moving, and it was really pretty, but I didn't actually note it, but since we're talking about animation, yeah, like, that was something I realized as I was watching the episode.
Yeah, it was neat.
But that's all I have for Act 1. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, Act 2. Sabine briefs the team on the Spire, the prison where Luminara is being held. And it sounds like a place that's pretty hard to get in or out, with its shields and its guards and it has fancy weapons. But Kanan spots a little platform with only a couple guards, and it's just so crazy and filled with dumb Jedi luck that it could actually work. They arrive at the planet and we get to see the Phantom for the first time! The Phantom is a little ship attached to the Ghost that lets them go on smaller missions. And they leave Chopper behind on the Ghost and head down to the prison. Hera flies in fast and tells Ezra, and Kanan tells Ezra to try and stay focused. And Ezra's like, oh, so there is a try! I thought there was no try! Oh! And Kanan is not amused at all by this. Hera swoops in the Phantom, and Kanan leaps out of the back of the ship, and he ninja lands and starts knocking out stormtroopers. And Ezra's like, oh my god, Jedi stuff! I can do that too! And he jumps out of the ship. And while Kanan was all quiet and sneaky, Ezra lands with a loud rolling bang right up against the door. And they hold their breaths for a moment. And just as Kanan starts chewing out Ezra, more guards come out. But Zeb and Sabine arrive and help just murder the crap out of those stormtroopers. So sorry, random stormtroopers number 6 through 9, you're dead. And Kanan says that this is exactly why Ezra needs Luminara. And Ezra just feels like he is the worst. But Ezra is the best lockpick of the group, and he gets them inside the dorm. Inside, they realize they had outdated data, and Luminara wasn't where they thought she was. Changing their plans, they all go forward together up the turbo lifts. Meanwhile, Hera has the Phantom perch under the platforms to wait for the crew. She picks up a something on her scanners. Something dark and fast. And it's a big old flying creature called a TBD. TBD. For to be determined. TBD. And it starts humping the Phantom. because it confuses it for a lady creature, and Yoda would be so proud of these buddies, because they're just humping the Phantom. And Hera has no choice but to move the Phantom. Back inside, the team gets split up. The team chooses to split up, not get split up, they choose to be split up. Zeb and Sabine hold the lift, which is their only escape route, while Kanan and Ezra go on ahead. Every time they come across stormtroopers, Kanan deals with them swiftly and fast, because there's a lot at stake. Getting to Luminara's cell, he mind tricks the guards, and the Master and Padawan go inside. And there's Luminara, in her little prison suit, looking all sad and distraught. And Kanan's like, wait, something is very wrong here. And Luminara stands up, walks towards them, turns, and passes through a sarcophagus where she's dead! And Luminara's dead! And she's been dead this entire time! And it's just her body, and it's mummified, and it's horrible to look at, and my poor girl Luminara. And then, who strolls through the door? None other than my favorite evil basic bitch, not even a Sith Lord, Mr. Grand Inquisitor, who introduces himself and pulls out his saber like a proper British gentleman of death that he is, the little shit basic bitch. I love the Grand Inquisitor. What did you think of Act 2?
It was pretty good. It almost felt like Act 3, the way things developed in it.
I know.
The whole Luminara thing is very, like, yeah, this is the part that's like, wow, this is really dark for Rebels. Like, lots of trooper murder, and then this thing with Luminara that's just, it's just crushing, because they find her, she's dead, and not only is she dead, it's a trap, which means that their news agency is either getting bad information or is turned against them. And yeah, it's just a very bleak, bleak section of the story. I like it. That's all I have, except for, like, I still think, Kanan is being a little presumptuous by being like, oh, wait till you meet Luminara. She's going to be a great teacher. It's like, hey, don't count your chickens before they hatch, Jedi. You should know that.
Well, Padawan, who lived as a drunkard for like 15 years.
Padawan, who's grown up and gotten a lot of experience in crazy situations, should know not to, like, you know, he's already potting him off. He doesn't even know she could be crazy or she could be dead.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just the excitement, because I'm sure for so long Kanan thought he was only one of the few, and so I think a lot of it is actually just straight up like excitement of, oh my god, there's another Jedi, I'm not alone.
Another Jedi alive, yeah.
Because, I mean, he just thought everybody was dead for so long. So.
But that's all I got for part two. Kanan's Jedi party reuniting party gets wrecked.
Mm-hmm. My first note is, I just like the opening where we get to see Sabine be the tactician that she is. Because, like, this young teenage girl is the one briefing them on the mission.
Planning everything out, yeah.
Yeah, so I really like getting to see Sabine. Because so far we've only seen her just be, like, a weapons expert and, like, make art and stuff like that. But we actually get to see here that she's actually a tactician. And she's, like, giving them information, and so I just like that moment. I also love the Phantom. I remember seeing the Phantom for the first time, because, like, the ghost comes in, and then, like, a tiny ship comes off it, and I was like, they have a ship within a ship to do the ship things!
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, that's so much cooler than, like an escape pod, to actually have a tiny little ship that can actually go and, like, shoot and fire and fly.
Yeah, and can get into and can be a little more nondescript and stealthy.
Yeah, yeah. So I really like the Phantom. I think it's cool. So I know that, like, you're feeling that Kanan's a bit presumptuous. I actually really like how he's presented in these scenes, because he's not dicking around. Like, early, because, like, in earlier episodes in the season, like, when he's fighting with, like, blasters, or, like, even the first time we see him use his lightsaber in the first episode, there's still kind of, like, a laid-back ease to him, where it's just kind of fun. He's fighting, it's cool, and stuff like that. But on this mission, like, he's not dicking around. Like, he is, like, expertly, like, ninja taking out stormtroopers with, like, and moving. Almost, there's almost, like, an Obi-Wan feel to him. Because, like, he's, like, super Jedi-focused now. And it's really cool to see the difference between how he, say, like, fought in the first few episodes with, like, blasters and being cool, opposed to him, like, fighting hand-to-hand combat with stormtroopers. And it's just, I really like how they're presenting him, like, super Jedi mode this time around.
I think also in this one, when he's in, like, really close quarters like this, it's easier for him to whip people around and do a lot of cool Jedi stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of, like, Darth Vader moves from Rogue One, where, like, first thing you do is just yank everybody's blasters out of their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then fling him against the wall. I love it.
Yeah. And I actually think, like, Kanan chewing out Ezra actually says more about Kanan's character in those moments. Because I think that's the best way of showing how scared and unsure Kanan is about being a teacher. Because when he is saying constantly that Ezra is unfocused and disciplined, and we'll see this in Act 3, Kanan's talking about himself. Like, he knows that he was never fully trained. He knows that he is not a full Jedi. And he just doesn't know how to handle it. And I think that says a lot about the Jedi, too. Because, like, he was taught in the Order. He was taught in the Temple, where he was taught to not, like, have fear and stuff like that. So he probably actually doesn't know how to handle these emotions. And he's just taking it out on Ezra. Probably not meaning to, but he was never really taught how to really productively do this. And yeah, he's had some experiences with, like, Hera and stuff like that, because he's clearly a very different Jedi. But I feel like a lot of this episode is Kanan trying to fall back on his dogmatic Jedi teachings, and it's not working for him, because that's not the kind of Jedi him and Ezra are. It's actually those dogmatic Jedi things that's making him and Ezra mess up in this episode. My next note is, I don't care if she's dead. I still love Luminara, and she should have been in the arc where Bears framed Ahsoka for murder, and I still stand by that to this day. Fight me. It's funny, I actually put it on Twitter today, and it had gotten, like, something like 50 reblogs of people being like, this is true!
It makes it all the creepier that she was a character that we actually knew from Clone Wars.
I know! Like, I just keep thinking back to, like, the Geonosis arc where she was in it, and I was just like... Or, like, when she fought Asajj Ventress with Ahsoka so early, and I was like, Luminara!
Yeah.
Because I've always liked her. Like, I think I remember when we talked about her in Clone Wars, like, I've always liked her look, I like her character, I've always liked that character. I think she's just a really cool character. It'd been one of the things, like, if it was, like, I don't know, like...
It's just sad seeing her as, like, the stripped down of her Jedi outfit and her dignity, and she's actually stripped of her life when we find her, actually. It's just sad.
It really is. And actually, that ties in with my next note, which is poor Luminara. Like, she died by herself. And, like, we know that it was a holocron that we was watching, but it was so vivid. Like, when they walk in, like, she looks distraught. Like, she's covering her face, and we see that moment where she looks up, and we know now that she was looking at the Grand Inquisitor. So she, like, looks up, and she pulls herself together to be executed. And it's so fast, but, like, there's so much emotion. Because I always think about, like, back during the Geonosis arc when Luminara and Anakin were talking about the possibilities of Barriss and Ahsoka dying. And, like, Luminara was so, like, put together. She was like, well, I'd be sad, but I've come to peace that, like, if something happened to my Padawan, it's the way things should be. And, like, here, like, she's stripped down, and she's clearly, like, upset. She's covering her face, and she knows she's about to die. And it's just really hard to watch, and she died all by herself alone.
You wonder what, like, you'd think she'd at least try to, like, crush the Inquisitor's windpipe with her force powers or something.
Yeah, I mean,
as a Jedi, she still should be pretty much, like, heads and shoulders above an Inquisitor, you know?
Well, we know that he was a Jedi, too.
Right, right.
He was a Jedi Temple Guard, so, like, he's fully trained.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, spoilers, he's a Jedi Temple Guard, or he was. But
he was the reader, right? He was the one who liked reading the...
The books and the thing, yeah.
Books, yeah.
But he was also... I was saving this note for much later, I think later in the season 2 when we find out he was a Temple Guard. He was actually present at Barriss Sophie's and Ahsoka Tano's trials in season 5. He's one of the guards that was guarding Ahsoka when she was on trial. And so when Barriss made her like big statement of like, and I'll bring up this note again later when we get there. When Barriss makes her big statement about how corrupted the Jedi were and stuff like that, he was already feeling disillusioned with the war, and like that just kind of sealed it, and that was like the big fall to the dark side. So like he was one of those guards with Barriss when she's like making this statement. Dave Filoni confirmed that later. Like he was one of those guys. So like that was like his big moment of just like, yeah, the Jedi do suck, and Jocasta Nu won't let me read books. So, yeah. He's a nerd. I love him. He's such a basic bitch. He's not even a true Sith Lord. He's like a basic bitch Sith. I love him. And my last note for this act is that this Luminara twist came at a really good time in the show. Because so far, like, they've touched on a couple dark topics, like the Lasats being killed off by Kallus's men and stuff. And we've seen a lot of stormtroopers die. But so far, it's all been kind of presented in more of a lighthearted sort of way. And I think when Kanan said to Ezra, there are more at stake here than he realizes, that's true. Because, bam, here's a corpse. Here's the Inquisitor. And all those, like, previous lighthearted moments are just suddenly gone because now with these new threats, like, the stakes are so much higher and they're way higher. And it's great because this is episode 4. Like, this is not...
Right.
This is not Zeb and Ezra taking a joyride in a TIE fighter. This is, oh my god, there's a dude with a lightsaber and he's hunting us and Luminara is dead and oh god. And, like, it really,
it's
like...
It's not just a heist story anymore. It's become a trap and turned dark. Seriously dark quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that moment when you're like, it's kind of hopeful and you're like, it's Luminara. And Kaden's like, there's something very off here. And then she's dead. And it's just, it needed to come now. I'm glad this isn't something that, and this is kind of, I don't want to say, like, a thing with the Resistance. I feel like Resistance is moving a lot slower than Rebels Season 1. Because, like, they're still putting in, like, a lot of plot stuff with, like, the First Order and all that stuff. And they're moving the plot along. And I actually used to think that Rebels Season 1 was moving very slow. But now, like rewatching it, these first three episodes are a lot more heavy than I remember.
They're whipping right along, aren't they?
They really are. And I'm interested to see when we get to Resistance if I'll feel the same way. Because I feel like Resistance is moving way slower than Rebels when it comes to, like, presenting this heavier material. Because I've already rewatched a lot of Resistance. Like, several episodes I've rewatched several times. I personally really like the episode The Children of Tahar. And I watched that one a lot, too. And I think that's probably the darkest episode they've had so far. Because it has, like, Kylo Ren murdering the planet and these families of these two children and stuff. But I didn't feel with Rebels that it was dark either until we got to this rewatch. So once we have more Resistance and we go back and relook at it, I'm wondering if I'm going to feel the same way of, like, this was a lot darker than I realized. So it's going to be interesting by the time we get to Resistance. A lot more of the show will be out, so.
Yeah. By the time we get to Resistance, it might be over.
That's true. Because it'll probably take us... We usually do 2 seasons of years, so we'll only be doing Rebels for 2 years. So by then, that'd be like at least... I would say at least 3 seasons of Resistance. So who knows how long Resistance is going to run. So.
Yeah. I would imagine more than 3 seasons, but who knows?
I'd say 3 to 4. Well, it really depends on, A, what happens in Episode 9... and how, because they've already said that Resistance is going to go into Force Awakens and Last Jedi timeline, And I think they said for episode 9, there's like a several year jump between episode 8 and episode 9.
Yes.
So that's like several years that Resistance can play in.
Right.
So I think that Resistance could potentially go on for... I still think Rebels had one more season in it. I think they cut Rebels short. I really do feel like Rebels had one more season in it, especially with the Marvel Comics bringing in Hera constantly. The Marvel Comics has had Hera in them a lot, both in the main Marvel Comics and the Doctor Aphra comics. So I feel like they could have really like gone on another season and had actually some of the stuff with like Hera working with Dr. Aphra and stuff like that in the animated show, which would have been awesome. I would love to see Dr. Aphra on screen. But where am I going with this point? My sickness has derailed my brain. What was I saying? Oh, but like with Resistance, there's a lot of time that they could play with. So I could actually see Resistance going on for more than 4 seasons, depending on how they handle it.
Oh, Yeah.
But I'm feeling at least 3 seasons, but I could see Resistance going on for like 4 or 5, depending on what they do. So.
What they're doing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Act 3.
Yeah, let's get to the fighting.
Yeah. So, Act 3.
The fussing and fighting.
And just remember, my nickname for the Grand Inquisitor, because that's a very long word, is Mr. Grand. So, Act 3. Mr. Grand strolls into the room with his fancy lightsaber, and Ezra tries to call Zeb and Sabine, but their comms are all jammed. And Kanan tries to fight the Inquisitor, but it's very clear he's outmatched. And the Inquisitor is all like, I got to read books and do research, and that bitch Jocasta knew is dead, and she deleted all the books. But we still got a lot of stuff on you, Kanan Jarrus, and I understand how you fight and your forms. I know you were Deppa Bialba's Padawan, and you suck. And he kicks Kanan to the curb. But luckily, Ezra has a detonator in his back pocket and blows out the door. And our heroes sprint into the hallways, but Mr. Grand follows after them with a calm and chill demeanor. And Mr. Grant continues to... Kanan. I think I remember I meant to write continue to fight Kanan, but it just says continue to blank space Kanan. That blank space could be a lot of things. He continues to screw Kanan, he continues to fight Kanan, he continues to fuck over Kanan. There's a lot of things that could go in that blank space. Anyway, so he's fighting Kanan, and he's checking out Ezra going, come to the dark side, we have cookies! And Ezra's like, Kanan gives me space waffles, and I like space waffles better than your cookies. But Mr. Grand keeps goading Kanan about how little he knows and how he's going to fail. During all of this, Sabina and Zeb realize that with their jammed comms that the Empire knows that they're there. Sabine has a grenade of her own and starts making plans. Troopers surround their turbolith and open fire the moment the doors open. But no one's there except Sabine's grenade, which explodes and knocks out the lift. Sabine and Zeb got off from the floor above and disables the other lift so no one can go up or down. Back to the fight, Kanan is starting to stand his ground in a lightsaber fight. But Mr. Grand is still just toying with him, and you have a feeling that he's probably just having a good time and he's not actually trying to fight Kanan at this point. And he throws Kanan down the hallway and gives Ezra a choice, the dark side or the light side. And Mr. Grand says that Kanan is unfocused and undisciplined. And Ezra's like, whoa, that's what my master said about me. Kanan and I are meant to be together. And Kanan throws Mr. Grand into the ceiling and the two heroes run away. They meet up with Zeb and Sabine and sprint for the hangar bay. Mr. Grand puts the whole factory on lockdown and the doors start closing. And our heroes just make it into the hangar bay, but Mr. Grand starts cutting his way through the door. Kanan grabs Ezra, and there's only one option to open the hangar door. Together, Ezra and Kanan focus on the Force and work together. Slowly but surely, the hangar doors open. And there's a platoon of stormtroopers waiting outside. And Zeb has one last grenade and throws it out to clear a path. And our heroes run out to the platforms facing the troopers in front of them. They call on Hera, and Hera arrives with her fleet of animal boyfriends who like to hump her ship. And the troopers piss off the Tibetis, and who start attacking and humping the troopers. And our heroes run towards the Phantom, but the Mr. Grand cut through the doors behind them. He throws his lightsaber, but Kanan senses it and blocks it away. All safe and sound, the good guys get the hell out of there on the Phantom, and it flies away. But on the Phantom, since it's such small, super close corridors, Ezra overhears Kanan tell Hera that the kid is now stuck with him as a master. And the Blueberry makes another sad face! And they arrive back in Lothal, and Ezra finally confronts Kanan about not wanting to train him. And Kanan says that he just wanted Ezra to have the best teacher. And Ezra says, I don't want the best teacher, I want your dumb face, idiot! And Kanan finally goes, you know what? I'm not going to try and teach you. I will teach you. And if we fail, then at least we fail together. And he hands Ezra his lightsaber, and they start their training for real this time. The end. What'd you think of Act 3?
It's funny, that last scene is partially like Jedi teaching his Padawan, and then there's part of it that's like dad playing catch with his son.
I know!
My only other note is I forgot about the spinning lightsabers until this episode, when I forgot that the Inquisitors, and then that reminded me that later on we're going to get the helicopter blades, and I'd forgotten all about that. It's one of those things, the spinning, and I know it's also a Grievy thing, but I never was impressed with the spinning lightsaber as a tactic. It's more like just a showy thing to me. It doesn't ever look like it really. It looks really threatening and dangerous, but the Jedi don't seem to have much problem with it, you know? It's just sort of, it just always seems sort of show offy and maybe just there to intimidate rather than be like practically make your fighting better.
You know, I actually, I didn't know this until I missed this in Rebels Recon. But I actually like the fact that they spin now, because Dave Filoni said it's a cheat for them, because they're not as skilled as someone like Maul, so they have to cheat to actually be good at their jobs. And I thought that was, I was like, that's a cool little thing to know.
You see, I think they have to cheat, but I don't think their cheat is as good. Like, Maul can just sort of do it. Like, having a machine spinning your lightsaber isn't the same as having it being, you're taking a part of the wielding of it away from the Force. You know what I mean? The control of it is partially by mechanics at some point. So you're using your Jedi or your Sith skills in tandem with those mechanics. But I just don't think it's the same. I just think it's like a sort of and he's kind of a show. The Inquisitors are sort of like a lower tier Sith. They got all the tricks, but they're just not as effective. You know, he knows to get in there and start like edging away at their confidence and, you know, telling them they're going to die and, you know, showing confidence and doing all the Sith stuff. But, you know, they're sort of the Dookus of Rebels, you know, at this point, they're pretty, you know, they seem to be the like badass, but just wait till Vader steps in. We'll see how badass these Inquisitors are.
I have to actually wonder if it's something.
Darth Vader shows up.
I have to wonder if it's something on purpose from Palpatine and Vader then. Because, as you were saying, like the cheat lightsabers actually take away from their abilities to actually wield lightsabers because it's a mechanic and it keeps them away from the Force. I have to wonder if it's something that they did on purpose to help kind of keep them from rising and becoming very skilled.
Yeah, I think there's part of that. And I also think that maybe that these guys don't have the skills anyway, so they're just sort of kept as mid-level flunky sort of levels. And, you know, they probably play with them a little bit to, you know, to talk them up, to make them think that they're badassier than they are. But, you know, yeah, they're disposable flunkies when it comes right down to it.
Yeah. We actually see that in the Vader comics when... I think it's the Burning Seas arc where the two of the, like three of the Inquisitors are facing off against the last batch of clones from Kamino who never had Order 66. And they're just like, oh, we're about to die. And one Inquisitor cuts off the other one's leg and he's like, bye. And Liz's like, you're disposable. Bye. And he leaves and he leaves her to die. So yeah, they see each other as very disposable too. Did you have any other notes?
No, I don't have, that's it for me.
All right. I know I asked you this in the first episode, but now that we're getting to see him in action more, what are your thoughts about seeing the Grand Inquisitor in action?
I might be a little, I just don't take these guys seriously. I have a trouble taking them seriously because I know that they're not a thing, really. They're going to be a thing in Rebels, but they never got beyond that scope, or we would have seen them turning up in the movies. You know, they would have been a problem for Luke at some point or something, or for Obi-Wan at some point. So I have a hard time taking them seriously. I guess early on, like, I don't remember what I was thinking when I watched this the first time. I probably would have been like, ooh, this guy's kind of badass. But at the same time, it's sort of like, yeah, how, you know, this guy's going to bite it at some point. You know what I mean? He's so I was having a hard time trying to figure out whether they were what they were, whether I was going to be able to work whether they were going to work in logically to Star Wars continuity and logic or not, to like really be too impressed by them at this point, you know. Or to have them feel threatening? I don't know.
For me, like, where the Inquisitor's work was, at the time that this episode came out, this was the only one we knew of, and he was just the Grand Inquisitor. So I was like, right. Oh, cool, so there's, like, just one of these guys. But where then it starts coming into play more, where I was just like, oh, what, there's more of them, was in season two when they introduced the fifth sister and the fifth brother and the seventh sister. Because I was like, oh, there's more of them, and they apparently have numbers.
How many of these guys are running around? Yeah.
Yeah, and we still, to this day, even with the Vader comics, there's like three Inquisitors we haven't met, and I think it's like 2, 3, and 4. And they're still like, we don't know what happened to the other ones. Like, there's still several. I'm like, how many are there? Where are they? And stuff like that. But I kind of like that there's a mysteriousness about them, because like, because they have numbers, for all we know, there might not even be a 1, 2, 3, or 4, because they wanted to keep it a mystery of like, oh, what if there's these other ones that we don't know about, when there's actually not. Like, there's so much, like, mystery about them, and even with the Vader comics, like, we still don't know everything about them and what happened to the rest of them. I just assume they all died at some point by the time, because after season two, we never see an Inquisitor again. Which I just, on one hand, I was like, that's cool. But on the other hand, I feel like it's a big missed opportunity. I would like to see more Inquisitors again. I think they could be potentially very interesting and very scary. And I wouldn't mind seeing, say, like, a novel just on the Inquisitors. Now that I say that out loud, I'm just like, whoa, why haven't they done that yet? So, yeah, I like what they could have been, but I don't think they are, in the long run, executed well.
So. Yeah, I'm very sketchy. I go up and down on how I feel about the Inquisitors as the story goes on.
Yeah, but when the Grand Inquisitor just shows up, I think it's a really cool idea of, like, there's this one guy who's a dark side user who works under Vader and hunts Jedi, because he was the only one at the time of when this episode came out, and I thought it was a really cool idea. I really like the fight between Kanan and the Grand Inquisitors, especially in the cell when they're really up close to each other. Because it's very clear that Kanan is very outmatched. It's obvious that he's probably never fought another Force wielder outside of his Padawan training. And their styles are just very different. Like, Kanan is swinging more wide and wild, while the Grand Inquisitor looks like a fencer. Like, he's standing, like, hand on his hip, like a fencer. And it's really nicely done to show how they're both very different in their fighting styles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Inquisitor's all confidence. Will he spring in his trap?
Yeah. Another one of my favorite shots is, actually, just the entire third act is just a lot of lovely battle scenes. There's a lot of long tracking shots, like when the lockdown doors are closing and they're leaping through them and, like, hurtling through the doors, and, like, the Grand Inquisitor is just, like, tucking and jumping and, like, chasing them too. And then, like, the final shot when they're running towards the Phantom, and they're just running between the TIE fighters. Like, there's a lot of really nice shots in this act.
Yeah, I like the shot where the camera followed him underneath the TIE fighter as everything's blowing up and just sort of, it was very nice. Very, very Star Wars.
And I kind of realized as I was watching this episode, I don't think Ezra would have done really well in the Jedi Temple, because he seems to learn best on the fly, like Kanan grabbing him and dragging him open over, and he's like, we're opening these doors right now, do it. And Ezra's like, oh, okay, open the doors. I just don't think Ezra would have done well in the Jedi Temple, because he just learns on the fly so much better. But then I started remembering from the Kanan comics that Kanan wasn't a perfect student either. He was constantly speaking out, and he was asking questions and annoying his mentors, and like he was teased by his peers.
Most Jedi, the ones that were any good were like that anyway. And you know, Ezra's only learning this way out of necessity, but he's Jedi. He's already gotten confidence, but from being a street rat. And so, you know, when he starts refining his Jedi techniques, but if he was in the Jedi Temple, they would have had him since he was, you know, a toddler. So they would have, you know, they would have had him. He would have been a different person altogether by the time he was this age. He would have been like fairly heavily trained by the time he was a teenager like this, you know?
Yeah. He probably wouldn't even be the Ezra that we would know and recognize.
Yeah. He would have had over a decade of like organized training with the whole of the Jedi Order, you know, as his teachers, you know, with a whole system teaching him. So yeah, it's hard to say.
But I like the fact that when we look back and look at the Kanan comics, like Kanan wasn't a perfect student either. He was actually a lot like Ezra. And so they're really perfect for each other.
Well, I mean, with a lot of the good Jedis and even the bad ones that went bad that still were like Dooku, you always had people always saying stuff like, oh, they were, you know, they were kind of a pain in the ass when they were kids, you know. Or they're always, you know, their master's always reminding them, like, yeah, remember, you were like that with me, you know, so.
Yeah. My next note is, I just really like the last scene with Kanan and Ezra sitting down and talking. Because it's just another example of why Kanan is one of my favorite Jedi. And also why I think Kanan and Ezra are the right kind of Jedi. And that's because they sit down and they talk about their damn feelings. They actually talk about their feelings, and, like, Jedi aren't supposed to sit and talk about feelings and stuff, and whenever, like, Obi-Wan tried to talk to Anakin about his feelings, it was always kind of awkward. Like,
this is a family unit. This is, Obi-Wan wasn't family. This is operating as he's a teacher and a Padawan and a family unit, and, like, work partners, too, so there's, like, a different dynamic going on.
Because, like, I was thinking about the Clovis arc when Anakin was the second Clovis arc when Anakin was jealous that Padme was working, and Obi-Wan comes to his room and he sits down and he's like, so, I see you're upset, and I kind of know how you feel, but I won't actually say Satine's name, and good talk, Anakin, bye! And Anakin's like, thanks, Obi-Wan. But, like, I think this is where Kanan and Ezra, like, gets being Jedi right. Like, they don't have worries about sitting down and being like, look, I'm scared to teach you, and I can mess up, and if we mess up, we'll mess up together, and we'll figure it out. And I think that's a really good moment for them, and they're the reason why I think that these two do being Jedi right.
I agree.
I'll get my last shallow note out. I don't care how dumb he is. I love the Grand Inquisitor. He's such a basic bitch, and I love him. And then my last note is, I touched on it on the last episode. I just wanted to bring it up again because it came to a head. I like how in the first episode, when Kanan looks really unsure about training Ezra, and then the last two episodes, Kanan has been avoiding training Ezra to the point where it's like, Ezra's like, when are you going to train me? We'll get there! And stuff like that. And it came to a head here, and it's really nice because it's something I miss watching the first time through, but they showed as early as episode one that Kanan was nervous about doing this, and they built it up to this episode, and it was a very nice kind of build that I didn't realize the first time I watched it.
Oh yeah, I'm picking up on all kinds of stuff that I didn't realize the first time.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 3. Do you have anything else?
No, are you ready to score it up?
Yeah, score it up, Chris.
Like last time, I'm giving this one an 8.5. It's a solid one. It was a little surprise for me because I was expecting sort of a string of a lot of episodes like the last one. So it's a very, very good, very good episode. Way darker than I expected.
For me, I really like this episode a lot. It brings out all the big guns in just one big old romp. It lays down for the first real time in the show what the stakes are in the show, that it's not fun and just stealing TIE fighters all the time. There are big bad guys out there hunting them. And it got really dark with the twist of Luminara actually being dead this entire time. And I really enjoy watching Kanan struggle with his feelings, and even taking it on Ezra is very telling about where he is as a person right now. And the fight scenes are awesome, and I really like the Grand Inquisitor. And I just really love this episode. It's actually one of my personal favorites. So I gave it a 9.5 out of 10.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, I really like this episode.
This one's probably showing up in our best of season one, I'm guessing, in Hope's best of, probably.
Maybe. So far, I haven't had anything lower
so
than...
So far.
I think I haven't had anything lower than an 8 so far, so it's going to be... I don't know if it's just my excitement to finally doing Rebels, but...
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We're not doing feedback this week. We recorded two episodes this weekend, and we sort of jumped the gun doing all the Kanan dives at once, so we just got ahead in feedback. So we're all caught up, and we did two episodes this weekend. So come back next week. Feel free to send us feedback, especially on iTunes. When you write and review our show on iTunes, it helps people find the show. And to follow up, we don't have candy to review.
No candy and no feedback this week.
It's probably going to be, I'll probably get it tomorrow. When Dario sends us our candy, Chris usually gets his 1 to 2 business days before mine, and he got his Friday, and I was expecting it to get it today, and I didn't. So.
Well, we got another week till we have to record next, so you'll definitely have it by then, unless there's been some sort of postal mishap.
Yeah, so, I guess where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website. That's where we got all the podcasts that you want to hear, including this one, which you're already hearing. You can subscribe to our podcast there, or you can subscribe to them on iTunes, the aforementioned iTunes, where you can also leave us a review. And you can find us on Facebook, where we have a Two True Freaks page, where we post all our shows and the beautiful artwork that accompanies it, and you can go and comment on the shows and converse with the other listeners and the creators of the show. And we've got the Two True Freaks Cantina, where everybody just sort of gets around and has a drink and chit chats, and you can also join that and talk. And we have also the unbelievably entertaining Twitter feed for Two True Freaks, run by the unbelievably incomprehensible Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm going to show off my snapping skills. Gene. Did you pick it up?
Yeah, I'm not. I can't do that one. And,
there you go. That was much more snappy.
Yeah, that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysandJedi. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have my website, geekygirlexperience.com. I've had a slow start to the new year, so stuff is coming. You can also find me on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short, where I write fan fiction. I have a Thrawn fan fiction called Forces of Gravity, and I also beta read for Valkyrie Strike by my friend Megan, and a bunch of other like little fan fictions and fanfics and stuff like that. So I still plan on doing that, and I'm working on the first chapter of the new year right now for Forces of Gravity. So yeah. I think next week is like the first episode that I remember just being like, on. If I remember if it's what I think it is. And hopefully we'll all be sick next week. I think this week we were both... I kind of feel bad because I really love this episode, but I'm just like, ugh.
tune in next week when Hope and I aren't full of snot. We got candy.
We'll have a full episode of Jay Guys and Jedi next week, and now I'm just gonna go to bed.
Amen.
Good night, everybody.
See you next time. Crash and burn.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and a number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.